Hi there, I'm Matt Ashburn, host of the Needlestack podcast. Needlestack is brought to you by Authenticate, creators of the go-to online investigation platform, Silo for Research. If you're looking for a way to conduct research anonymously, protect against cyber threats, all while avoid tipping off your investigative targets, then you want to try Silo for Research. The Silo Research platform completely isolates your online web browsing, allowing you a choice of location and digital fingerprint, and also has built-in workflow and automation tools. The best part is that Silo for Research is software as a service, so it can be used from any computer or location without the need for things like virtual machines, standalone networks, or dirty networks. To learn more about Silo for Research, visit Authenticate.com. That's authentic with the number 8.com.
Including the side B of the tape, which had the investigator accidentally record himself calling his daughter to tell her that he's not coming home for supper. And I wish I was kidding, but that really can happen.
Because
that's
name,
all
Susie?
That's on side B. No, I actually don't remember.
Welcome to Needlestack, the OSINT podcast. I'm your host, Shannon Reagan, today. And a quick warning before we get started, if you're listening with young OSINTers, there will very soon be curse words in this episode, so shuttle them out of the room quickly. And that is because we're joined by two very awesome people, Justin Seitz and some lawyer, as we'll be referring to her. These are the great minds behind Bullshit Hunting, a wonderful newsletter that I can't stop reading. So thank you guys for joining us today.
Thanks so much for having us.
Justin, I'll start with you. Could you tell us what bullshit hunting is and why you have such a potty mouth?
Yeah, well, I don't know that I can explain the second one. Probably growing up in rural Saskatchewan will do that. So bullshit hunting is really, I think, a culmination of a bunch of my work from previous years in my career and also some lawyers' work, you know, that we were doing kind of as a hobby or maybe part of our job, but not fully. But it was really kind of came from us wanting to be able to get some of these stories out that we were working on behind the scenes. But also we realized like a lot of people needed to be taught how to do kind of basic research stuff or how to chase down public records. So a lot of the stuff we found we were looking at was bullshit. It was bad forensics, bad process, bad prosecutors, bad witnesses, just bad everywhere. So it was kind of like, this is bullshit and we need to teach people how to hunt this stuff down, kill it with fire.
One of the things that I loved about bullshit hunting, there's definitely like, you know, OSINT tips and tricks throughout, but the series of the hunt has been fascinating and I think really shows the interaction between OSINT and legal that you guys bring to the table. Could you tell us what the hunt is and, you know, maybe as well as some of the exoneration cases that you highlight on your newsletter?
Sure. Yeah. So the hunt really came from a case that started here in Canada, which was the Neil Stonechild inquiry. I had started looking at this case for an unrelated reason and stumbled upon the fact that the two police officers that were ultimately, you know, found guilty, not of a crime, but in an inquiry, they were actually innocent. And their guilt was based upon absolutely egregious science that was not science, by someone who clearly had a problematic history. So As I started following that problematic history backwards, I found the case of Doug Mauser in Stanislaus County in Modesto, California. Had the same forensic expert. And it was then that I think I realized like, oh, you can't just walk away from these things. And this is actually, a lot of this stuff is beyond my skill set. I need help. And it happened by accident. You know, I was not out to exonerate anyone. I was actually trying to find police corruption here in Saskatoon, Saskatchewan. Now we find ourselves with a handful of wrongful conviction cases, primarily in California, but we've helped in cases kind of all over the U.S.
it's fascinating. You can definitely see the passion that you bring to it. And there's a lot of flair in your writing, but, you know, makes it for a very intriguing read.
I'm glad.
So, Moira, I'll pivot to you. How did you get involved in this, you know, maybe what started as an OSINT project, but definitely had, you know, this legal framework to it?
Well, the easiest answer is Justin asked, and I can't be stopped. I think I'm a naturally nosy person. So if somebody asks, will you take a look at this? I think there's something weird here. And the Mauser case is so weird from a legal perspective. None of the evidence that came in at that trial is evidence that I could ever imagine getting admitted in any of my civil cases.
That's terrifying.
It's the fact that basically California has discarded rules of evidence for criminal cases specifically as a policy choice was kind of shocking to me. The types of evidence in the Mauser case, it would be per se ineffective if assistance of counsel to get in profiler testimony in any state other than California and I think Mississippi. Even in Florida, you can't have it. So it's shocking. I mean, not even Florida.
It's a low bar.
That's how you know something's wrong.
When Justin asked me to look, I said, this is so effed up, except, you know, more floridly. And the further that we looked and found that not only did the key witness in the prosecution's case make up most of his credentials, but he'd done it in Canada as well. So from there, I mean, how do you stop looking?
Yeah. Well, I think you brought up a lot of points there that was like, you know, your legal perspective applied. Are there any, you know, tips that you have for like OSINTers that you are just dying for them to know? You know, as a lawyer, maybe things seem obvious, but maybe you wanted Justin to know in this case.
Probably a lot she wishes that I knew before I met her, actually.
Well, I think, you know, what was really impressive is that Justin's OSINT mindset is very similar to the mindset that I'd like to see more lawyers have in terms of investigation. I mean, you want people to look and envision where information is and then develop a plan to get it and not necessarily just throw out these pre-formulated requests to the people you think should give them to you. But I did notice that perhaps there were areas that he might have been able to improve in. I think we've done some great work with public records requests.
I think I've come a long way. Right? I think my most recent performance review, you indicated that it was not garbage.
Yeah, yeah.
Congratulations.
Right.
That's... I mean, excellent work with the shit stirring and the records requesting.
Thank you. Thank you.
I think one thing that was something that I had to tell Justin 3 or 4 times before we started to do them together is online forms are nice. They're easy. But if you are sending in a public records request, it really makes a difference if you possibly can to get them out in a form that looks like a letter and not a response to a web form.
That's a good tip.
It's a silly thing that this might make a difference in the response, but fundamentally, it really does. To send out something that looks like a letter and then you have an exact copy of what you sent in. The other thing is, I think that there is a tendency towards building information on information in a way that presumes too much specificity. You don't want to send out a public records request, for example, looking for all information relating to specific first name, specific last name. If that's not how this person is recorded, if you've misspelled it, if they've misspelled it, you're just going to get a denial.
Yeah. Easy to say no.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. It's you have to think about public records requests as a kind of stacking information. Start with the broadest thing that is acceptable to you. You know, all documents concerning the broadest description. And then separately, not as part of what you're seeking, but a helpful description. That's where you put your specifics. So if you're looking for an arrest report about an incident in a bar, a lot of people would say, send me the arrest report for Jason Stone at the, you know, 8-Ball Bar on January 1st.
Hold on. Is that like a ex-boyfriend? How? What's the deal with the...
The specific name, sounds like personal injury and lawyer. That,
the bar sounds... Is there a story here that you want to share with the group?
I didn't want to use John Doe, and it's a law firm I drive by. I don't think that Jason Stone, personal injury attorneys, have actually been arrested, and I think that bar has been closed, so I think we're safe.
Did you ever get in a fight in that bar?
What?
You can take the
define
fifth.
Define fight.
You know what? Let's just move the conversation along. I'm sorry I asked.
You're getting the legal squabble outside that bar.
So if you want to find something out about a specific, you know, don't say arrest report. You don't want anybody to say, well, you know, wasn't specifically an arrest report. He was only detained. You know, start with a broad date and time and a location and all documents about, and then separately say, you know, I'm looking for information concerning something where the police responded to this address on or about this day. We believe that such and such individuals might have been involved. And that way, if it's not how they categorize information, you're not walking yourself into a denial.
Great, great tips. Public records requests come up a lot in the hunt. Justin, you know, what were you bringing to the table? What were you doing all this time? How did your OSINT background, you know, aid some of these requests?
Yeah. I think it's just the tenacious run down every date, every name, try to get as much background as possible, try to know more, you know as much about what we're going to get back in advance. Because it's also important to know how and when you can call bullshit on people. So, you know, just everything we do is backed by a lot of research. And so for me, it was always just like building out these extensive timelines and maps and, you know, having 10 different ways of telling them that they're full of shit was important to me. Mm-hmm. And then learning that, you know, learning from someone else's lawyer that you don't necessarily need to do that for everything. And there are certain points in an investigation, a case where it's good to just be like, if it doesn't move these two things, like these two core issues along, then don't worry about it because it's no longer important to cast a wide net or we're no longer looking to actually like acquire more information. Now we're actually trying to help people form arguments, right? Or form like information arguments, like pointing these things into something that's much more cohesive. So I can be kind of bad for wanting to just continually, I want to run everything down forever. And also I think it's the feeling in this particular county that there's more. You know, there's more people that could be wrongfully convicted. There's more people we know that have been. And so I think there's also that, like, trying to be thorough, but not trying to get too wrapped up in the details. But that thoroughness and the intelligence and kind of sweeping things together and knowing how to boil information out and isolate it and chase it down, that's kind of where I was useful.
For those you know, critical pieces that you really, really do need, that you are going to, you know, kind of spend the effort to get, are you kind of crafting your request, like thinking about rebuttals or like making clear, like, I know you're full of shit, like, give me what I'm asking for?
It's so dependent on the person receiving the request and the context, right? So I had tweeted recently that there's like this large organization in California that does not have a very good reputation publicly, but their information office has been a delight to deal with. Their attorneys have been easy to deal with so far in their information office. It's really strange.
Okay.
Some, you know, you'll then move to, so it's like a state organization, you'll move to a county that's like super helpful, right? They'll call or they'll ask for clarifications, and the next one over will be like, denied, 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 fuck you, denied all week long, right? That's all I get. And then it's kind of like a game for me. It's like, okay, well, what about this? What about this? What about this? And we've had situations where people just turn over records because they're like, oh, just leave me alone. You know, just go away.
Nice.
I don't, though.
Warm down.
So I'm back again in that case. And I hope they've learned that, yeah, that's not going to happen. So it just depends. And then federally, it's like it just goes into this big, you never know when or if you're going to get shit back from like larger agencies that might be based out of DC or have a much more like might have national security reviews or extensive redaction stuff that they got to do. It's just, you don't know until you start engaging with an information office what you're dealing with. And sometimes they like you until they don't. And then that you can easily just stop receiving stuff for no reason. Then you're kind of forced to litigate.
Your California comment reminded me recently. I heard Californians are nice but not kind, and like New Yorkers are kind but not nice. So maybe that fits that dichotomy. Which brings me to my next question.
California is a strange place. Yeah.
These things differ greatly state to state. Some lawyer, maybe this is best posed to you. Is there any, you know, resource that you would recommend, or how is it best to like understand what you're up against, like based on the, you know, the jurisdiction or whatever that you're requesting from?
Well, I'd say that every jurisdiction does have a definite kind of statewide character. Florida is lovely with public records requests, very, very transparent, although kind of, you know, not a mess in other ways. Texas, another state you wouldn't expect to be great, generally very transparent. People call you back. They ask, what can I do for you? If they don't understand a request, by and large, very, very surprising. Nevada is generally lovely, and they've got very broad requests. California, very catch-as-catch-can. The best resources for kind of getting a handle on a state's public records law is if you find the agency that enforces it, it's usually the Secretary of State. Often there is a policy manual that they follow when reviewing requests, and that'll give you a sense of whether they're more presumptively open, like Florida or Texas, or presumptively closed, like California. Apart from that, you can look through requests that have been granted on Muck Rock and see exactly how friendly people tend to be, or unfriendly. But by and large, I mean, you don't know until you ask. So I would say generally ask first, write a request that it is easy to say yes to, and see what happens. Sometimes you'll be surprised. Other times you'll kind of have to dig in and fight.
I did want to ask one more thing on records requests, because I feel like this is really, really critical and shows, you know, the intersection of OSINT and, you know, legal. Are there any anecdotes from the hunt that a records request has like opened up a new avenue, you know, for your OSINT rabbit holes, you know, that have paid off in that or other cases?
Oh, I want to defer.
Don't you defer to counsel?
I'm going to defer to counsel. it's like fear and loathing. And I'm Hunter S. Thompson, and this is my attorney.
And I'm the 500-pound Samoan attorney. Yeah, sure.
Fine.
Hey.
I mean, do we want to talk about the recording that we got?
Yeah, totally. What's a gooder?
So that is the essence of if you keep throwing well-written public records requests at people until they are exhausted, sometimes you get something that you didn't even anticipate that anyone would give you. We had been throwing public records requests at this county for several months, I think. And eventually they asked Justin if he wanted to have a call with them to figure out what he really wanted. And at that point, I think they got a little bit scared or desperate or were just trying to flail around. So we had been asking in California, there's this public records exception that's not universal, where if they have given something to somebody else, even if it's otherwise exempt, you can have it too. So we had knowledge that the case we were looking into had been on forensic files, and there were images from forensic files that could have only come from the authorities we were requesting from. So we started throwing out requests for everything that they'd given to forensic files through their specifically named production company, etc. And that was the one that I think made them nervous enough that they wanted to talk to Justin. And I think they backed down from it. I think they decided they didn't want to talk to you.
Yeah, they never, like, I'm friendly. And they decided that they didn't want to talk to me. They stood me up. Yeah, I'm a super nice guy.
To make him feel better, I think, to help his feelings, they sent a recorded interview with one of the other suspects.
Oh, no. Okay.
Detailing his alibi.
Mm-hmm. And a transcript. And in one spot, they circled part of his statement and said, "This is a lie."
Oh.
And we're like, "So you wouldn't give me like what your current address is before in a records request, but now you're giving me audio files of an interview plus a transcript."
And clearly mental work product of the investigators.
Including the side B of the tape, which had the investigator accidentally record himself calling his daughter to tell her that he's not coming home for supper. And I wish I was kidding, but that really fucking happened.
Because
that's
her name,
all
Susie?
That's on side B. No, I actually don't remember. But let me tell you, I laughed my ass off when I heard that and went, "What? Why did you give me this? Like, what law were you following in this case? But you won't turn over waivers to a production company. So does that mean you were uninsured while you were shooting that stuff?" I mean, we can do this like all day, right? And I think that is kind of the point that they understand, which is that if you're going to be evasive, like, we're going to eventually just continue to box you into a corner until, like, you have to, like, this is the law. The public deserves to know this stuff. And in particular, if you have a bunch of fairly well-credentialed people saying that your county has done something wrong, the more evasive you are, the harder we're going to come at you.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're learning this now, a year later. I don't think that last year they took it seriously. And I think that, like, it's one of those things that investigators, particularly people who are not working for money, which we're not, we're doing it because you have done the wrong thing and we're trying to fix it. So we're not going away. Right? And records exist forever.
Well, aside from the boxing in technique, were there any other, like, OSINT techniques, methodologies, data sources, resources that you just find yourself coming to over and over again in these types of investigations? Are you deferring to counsel again?
Well, I was going to defer to you and say Google Earth. I mean, I think is also key. You know, when you're thinking about something that you didn't see, one of the key things is it plausible? Could it have happened? And I don't think that there's a real way to assess that without photographs and locations. And we did that past bit showing how you need to walk a scene. And mm-hmm. if you're not physically there, that's key.
Honestly, I have learned like so much about legal databases and how to search. And that has been incredibly useful and helpful. And that, like, a lot of that is somebody else's lawyer just teaching me, like, here's how you search in PACER properly. Like, here's how cases are cited. Like, even in Canada, our court system's nowhere near as complex as yours, right? Like, I still struggle with what is the difference between a circuit, superior, like, all of this stuff. So there's all of these things. And then also, before I started working with her, I didn't spend a lot of time doing county record searches and stuff like on a case by case basis. Now it's like automatic. And just learning, like getting someone to teach you why and where to look and what you can find in those spots was crucial. So for me, like getting a whole bunch of kind of education around not only records requests, but how to do kind of more legal research and then turn that into intelligence, right?
Any other parting words of wisdom for OSINTers or legal professionals that are looking to wade into a hunt of their own, a bullshit hunt, perhaps?
Always on letterhead, never the web form. I just can't repeat it enough.
Make it look legit.
Yes, look like you own a stamp.
So I don't own a stamp. I don't have multiple envelopes either, okay? I mean,
the business kind, the manila kind, you want them to think this is a person who has access to flat envelopes and knows how to use them.
A guy sends a couple of letters with no letterhead and now he just never hears the end of it is what it is. my tip, party hard and moisturize.
Okay. Well, what more do you need to know?
That was two tips, actually.
Depends on the party.
You know, it doesn't.
Thank you guys so much for being on today. Thank you, Justin. Thank you, Some Lawyer. And thanks to our audience, as always, for being with us. You can learn more about where to find Justin and Some Lawyer on our episode page. You can also view transcripts and other episode info on our website at authenticate.com/needlestack. That's authentic with the number 8.com/needlestack. And be sure to let us know your thoughts on Twitter, X, and Blue Sky at Needlestack Pod, and to like and subscribe wherever you're tuning in today. We'll see you next time.
Bye.
Bye.